This is Leading Lives. I'm Derek Brough. In this episode, we speak with Tia Smith, Bell South Professor of Mass Communication at Xavier University of Louisiana. Tia joined Xavier in 2015 as Department Head of Mass Communication, and her research focuses on gender, race, sexuality, and media. She has studied South African women freedom fighters and black women hip-hop fans, among other groups. Tia's background includes stints as a travel writer, journalist, and corporate communications consultant. She brings these diverse experiences to her work with students at Xavier, which has the distinction of being the only historically black and also Catholic institution of higher education in the U.S. Tia was in Nashville for a conference, and she stopped by Vanderbilt to talk with me about the multimedia assignments she gives her students, the challenges her students face moving into professional work, and the importance of critical theory in creative practice. Oh, and she has the most surprising answer yet to our standard question about analog technology. So Tia, tell me a little bit about you and what you do and what you teach.
Okay, I am the head of mass communication at Xavier University. I teach courses like research methods, media law and ethics, media criticism, film appreciation, and I also teach in the women's studies department. It's a minor, actually, at Xavier. I just joined the faculty at Xavier in 2015.
Okay.
From the University of the West Indies in Trinidad and Tobago. So that's where I actually first learned about and really began using technology in the classroom in Trinidad, which is a very interesting experience. But that's just a little bit about me.
Well, and I wanted to say thank you for stopping by to see us today. You're in town in Nashville for the Story Conference.
Yes, I am.
Which is, tell me what the Story Conference is.
Well, I've never been, but I am looking forward to the space where creatives come together and imagine the possibilities of how you can use stories to do a number of things, whether it's business people telling or selling their brand or talking about who they are as a company or organization, or creatives using storytelling to share ideas about themselves and the world around them, or activists using stories to talk about issues that matter, or they want to build a center or space of advocacy around. So I'm excited to be in my element. This year's theme is wonder. So I'm wondering what that's going to look like. Everyone's saying, you know, get prepared, just get ready to feel the intensity of the possibilities of imagination. So, hey, I'm all for it. I'm excited.
I love it. Well, I love storytelling, and I love creative storytelling. I love visual storytelling. And so I that's kind of what I want to talk to you a little bit about, because you've been using digital storytelling of various kinds in your teaching. Can you tell me a little bit about what that looks like in your in one or more of your courses?
Right. So throughout all of my courses, I incorporate visual storytelling. And that's because we have a mass communication background, and our curriculum is centered on multimedia concentration and multimedia applications and tools, and getting our students prepared for careers as a journalist or an entrepreneur or something like that. So we want to always incorporate those skills, multimedia skills, in our teaching and in our classroom. So the problem is we don't always have access to the technology. So how do we be creative when students sometimes say, well, you know, Dr. Tia, I don't have access to the internet, or I don't have access to, you know, I have a low-grade smartphone. I can't do all those things in memory and so on. So I think that's the challenge, because we make the assumption that everybody has access. And we're forgetting that not everybody has access. So we have to keep that in the fore. And this classroom then becomes a space where we are trying to build and create a sense of equity for access. In doing so, I teach a multiple, I guess, multiple methods of how to tell stories with your smartphone, but also how to tell stories in groups. So if one student has a smartphone, they'll do a group project.
Okay.
And so they'll take turns. So it's a multiple, it depends on the student population in the class, how I use it. And then I'll talk a little bit more, I guess, about what that actually is. So some of the assignments.
But the access thing is really important, right? I mean, you've got to know your students and kind of know what resources they have and what they have to bring. And you don't want students to feel put out or left out because they don't have the same tools that everyone else,
that other people do. Right, and some of the students are, they said, well, I'm in university, and it's a matter of shame for them to come forward and say, look, I can't do this. I want to be professional, but I do not have the tools, and I want to invest, but it's a money issue. I'm working two jobs, I'm taking care of a family, or whatever the issue may be, the challenge may be, it doesn't mean that I don't want to be successful. It just means that I need a little bit of extra help.
Yeah.
Or can I work in the evening? So a lot of our faculty are very open and coming in the evenings and working with students after hours and working on the computers and, you know, just making it accessible for those who do not have the technology that they need to be successful in the classroom.
And I guess some of that is that you may have some tools on campus that are available,
right?
Computer labs and such.
Right.
But you need to be able to be there when the students can be there and use them so that you can help coach and mentor.
Right, because we're a small campus, so we have maybe three or four jobs in one.
Right, yeah.
With security, where the open the doors, bring the lunch, whatever it is, to get it done.
Yeah.
But it's all in the matter of being helpful to the students and really wanting them to succeed, as well as balancing our own lives outside of campus.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really interesting.
You talked about the shame piece. How do you open up those conversations with students to make it okay for them to say, "Hey, I'm gonna need another way to do this."
Hey, Derek, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because it varies from student to student, but I think it's important to mention shame because there's an assumption that everyone has access. We're in a digital age, and you feel really pushed to the margin if you are anything less than. For example, my daughter is 14, and we saw Ariana Grande in the airport in New Orleans, and her phone is just a basic cell phone.
That's very exciting.
It's very exciting for her.
Right.
But it's funny because she said, I said, well, go and see if she'll get a selfie. And she was like, Mom, I cannot pull out this phone
to take
a selfie with Ariana Grande. This is not appropriate. I can't do emojis. I can't do this. And she was very embarrassed by the apparatus that she was using and trying to shame me, cuteness.
Yeah. I have a 14-year-old daughter. I understand this.
Yes, yes. I was like, oh, my God, Mom, are you crazy? This is Ariana Grande. I cannot be embarrassed. But similarly with students, on a different level, the students feel that they are being shamed because they're not prepared. Right, you know, you're expected to have certain things when you come to university, but it's also a place of privilege, right? And we have these expectations around what students should come with. I mean, the books are expensive, the fees are expensive, you know, they may sacrifice some bit of their life in time in order to make it happen, and sometimes we need to be a little bit more patient in understanding that. So there's a lot of for those who do not have, there is some shame associated with having those conversations about, I don't have access, what do I do, how do I invest in myself, you know, and it could be, for example, we had a meeting with the students yesterday, and we introduced a film kit, and so this film kit is about $100.
Okay.
You know, if you go on Amazon, you can buy this microphone, you can buy this lens for your, you know, so just small things and say, let's, over time, let's save $10.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and Beyonce was just in town. How much are the Beyonce tickets? Okay,
$140? Right.
Well, this is just $100.
Right.
So let's put it in comparison.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting conversation, and it's also very, you have to be very patient with students.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the assignments then. What are the types of stories that you're asking students to produce?
Xavier's mission is based on social justice and for a more just and humane society. And as a feminist, I take on the cause very much. And a lot of our assignments, particularly my assignments, deal with the element of creating spaces that are more humane, looking at people's lived experiences, challenges, and it could just be everyday experiences about life in New Orleans. Some of the stories include looking at feminists and feminism in the millennial age, and what is the feminist agenda for millennials, and how is that played out in the city of New Orleans? What does that look like? So students would then go into the city and take pictures, have visual essays of what they think represents feminism. And it's so abstract, or sometimes can be very concrete. It depends on the creative's lens of the student. In addition to that, we have students that use poetry. So they blend art and visual art as well. And they would record themselves writing poems about feminism or writing poems about some type of social justice issue. So we do a lot of collaborating with or intersections with art, social justice issues, political issues, ideologies around what these things look like, ideologies of injustice, and how do we make sense of it all within an academic space, but also bring it in the community as well, our surrounding community. So that's what the assignments kind of look like from a broader context. For a more specific context, it's basically I tell students we're going to do some digital ethnographies. And they may follow their favorite activists on Twitter. And they will engage with that activist. They'll retweet. They will know what's happening with that activist. And they will have an assignment that would screenshot tweets and things like that. So they'll have a visual essay about that. And then they would now retweet and create a campaign about this is what this activist is doing. So what does this story look like? What is the digital presence of their favorite activist? And then they will begin to engage with the language that the activists use, so on different levels. So it depends on that class of, and media criticism, we work a lot with digital activists.
So what are the goals of an assignment like that? Are you preparing students to do their own activism in digital spaces? Is it, are you trying to make sense of how activism works?
I had this idea of hashtag activism and how effective it is. I know it brings awareness, but then what? I always ask students, well, then what? Okay, I know it's important to have awareness, but is that awareness going to change policy? What are the real implications of awareness, and how do we move from that digital space to the physical space? And that that's where the assignment emerged out of. Making sense of, okay, now you're an activist and you want, or maybe you're not. Maybe you're just curious about the world. But how do we intersect and how do we engage our digital selves and our physical selves? And what does that look like? And how does one speak to the other? And we're trying to figure it all out. We have no answers. But the assignment really gets them to be reflective and to contemplate the world around them and to really think about their digital space. It's not just about communicating, taking selfies, and it's not just a me world. But what are you actually saying? What is your platform? And then
how are you part of a community through this?
How are you part of a community through that? So, and then how do you create communities? And are you marginalized within those communities? Because it's interesting how we look at digital communities and space and digital space and the occupation of that space and who has the platform and who has the voice and who feels that they're muted because it's an assumption that everyone has the opportunity to talk back.
Right. I think that was briefly true in like 1995.
Yeah, yeah.
For 3 months, the internet was great.
Yeah, everybody could participate. Well, I don't know. Right.
Yeah.
People are being silenced
sure.
all the time.
Yeah.
So is that silence visual? Is it silence, you know, in terms of how you tweet, if you're using a blog or a vlog?
Yeah.
Or some type of, I don't know, visual narrative? How are you then pushed to the margins? How are you discredited?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
How are you made meaningless? Or how are you made meaningful? And so in which ways does that matter? So those are assignments come out of my media criticism class. So we look a lot at social media.
Well, and one of the things that we've explored in the podcast before is this relationship in a teaching environment between critique and creativity.
Mm-hmm.
That often you can have students create something so that they become better critics or vice versa.
Right. And I think that's very important, Derek, because students need to understand how art is created, how work is created, so that they can understand the pieces within it.
Mm-hmm.
And they can examine that. So as creators and as producers,
mm-hmm.
right, and as consumers
mm-hmm.
of the media or of social media or of existing in these different spaces, I think it's really important because it helps them to think critically about why I chose to frame a photo this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what am I trying to convey? What intent maybe am I trying to encode in that particular image?
Mm-hmm.
And why am I using a particular tool, a particular mechanism, a digital tool in the classroom? And what am I trying to get you to do and to engage? Is, for example, I had a conversation with my colleagues last night, and we were talking about doing an online class, and the bandwidth, we were having some problems with bandwidth. Just kill the video. Let's just use audio.
Right, yeah.
They said, well, what about intimacy? Because audio is one thing, and we know you could have a static picture up there,
right.
But the dynamicism of video helps you feel like you belong to a community in a way that maybe audio does not.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all these conversations about it, but when you begin to understand choice
mm-hmm.
and agency and how you put together the story
mm-hmm.
with the technology,
mm-hmm.
then you become more considerate of it. So.
What, particularly when you're asking students to produce something,
mm-hmm.
digital story of some sort, what do they find hard about that? What's challenging for students?
To produce something, with having a professor like myself, they always want to please me around what they think I want. So the challenge for them is, what do I think she wants so I can get an A? You know,
mm-hmm.
instead of thinking about what you want to create, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And trying to negotiate, well, there's an A and a grade on this, so I'm going to give her what she wants versus this is what I would actually like to investigate.
Yeah.
Or this is what I actually want to do. And so I think for the first and second year students, that becomes the challenge. How do I get the A?
Mm-hmm.
For the juniors and seniors, there's a little bit more agency.
Okay.
And a little bit more, you know, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty confident. You know, she's taught me some things, but now I have it. So I'm letting go of the even string or the string, so to speak. But I think that's the challenge for students to think, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
What next? If I'm giving you an open field, where do I go? Where do I run? So we have to kind of reel them in and say, these are some topics that you can get or you can consider.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, they're still confused to the very last minute.
Right,
I don't know what to do. And they're freaking out. But over time, as they progress through the program,
mm-hmm.
they become a little bit more savvy.
Yeah.
And they become a little bit more comfortable with the technology.
Sure.
And some students are a little bit timid about the technology because we also assume that the digital natives, They know everything already. We don't have to teach them how to use the technology, but we do. And we have to teach them how to use it properly.
Sure.
Because there's a use of
it. Thoughtfully. Yeah. 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 Well, and I run into this, you know, like just because you follow a comedian on Twitter or you post some selfies on Snapchat, like that's a drop in the bucket, right? Like there's a lot of other things you can do with technology, and often in an academic setting, we're asking students, maybe we're asking them to use Twitter or Snapchat, but we're like the purpose is completely different,
right?
And so it's if they quickly get outside of their comfort zone.
Right. And even the language becomes different as well, because if they're tweeting about themselves or my students don't tweet as much because Twitter is for the older generation.
This is what my teenager tells me.
Yeah, mama, you're not on Twitter. Right. Come on, you know, and then totally Facebook is not even a consideration anymore.
Those are for our grandparents, right?
Right. Grandmas follow me on Facebook. Right. You know, that's not going to happen. So if it's a different platform, how then do I use language? If my professor's looking at my Snapchat or my Instagram, and she's following me, my pictures on Instagram, you know, how do I post those videos, and what do I say? How do I professionalize that?
Yeah.
So it's a
yeah.
different type of conversation. It's a different type of digital representation that I'm having and digital conversation with my professor. So the language shifts as well. The content shifts. And so you get different posts from the fun stuff that they like to post with concerts, you know, food.
Right.
You know, just the everyday things about I am great, and then more thoughtful. Right. Yeah, everything is like
that's
great.
That's your average 14-year-old Instagram. It's just I am great.
I am great, which is great.
Right.
But as a college student, they become more thoughtful about what they're posting. They say, wait a minute, I'm going to apply for a job soon. Somebody may look at my Instagram.
Right. How can I create a digital identity that actually represents me well and shows that I have things to offer?
Right. So it's a shift that happens from high school to college that they quickly learn. Maybe about the sophomore year.
Right.
It takes some time. And as they get more serious and mature to the program.
Well, there's a lot of tools that one could use to tell stories, right? A lot of digital tools. And you mentioned, you know, kind of familiarity as kind of one factor. But are there other factors or objectives that you consider when you're pointing students to one set of tools over another? Or for this assignment, we're going to use, you know, it's going to look like this, so we're going to use these tools.
Yes and no. Usually it depends on what students are comfortable with. For example, in my Women in Media course, I gave the assignment of students to creatively use a fictitious character named Della. Della Reese had just passed.
Okay.
One of my favorite actresses and performers. And I said, and my ode to Della, we're going to do something about Della. They had no idea who Della Reese was.
Fair enough.
So after an education of who Della Reese was, I said, come on, let's do something. I said, you can choose how you want to represent this feminist superhero. So some students chose to do a podcast.
You said superhero.
Superhero.
Okay, all right.
Superhero. And they interpreted in a number of different ways. Some students chose to do a podcast about Della, and it was an exchange where folks would call in and talk about feminist concepts and talk about representation and talk about what happened at the party, what do I do. They talked about the Me Too movement, and then others used poetry. So it was a visual, not poetry, they used an essay, so photographs about images of Della and what the superhero looks like. So it was very much an embodied extreme close-up of fingernails, of hands, of feet.
Photos they created themselves?
Photos that they created themselves.
Yeah.
And then another student, a small group, they actually created a mini film where there was an actual superhero who had long hair and her hair was power.
Okay.
So she would go through campus, you know, fighting crime. Right. There. So it was a really cool assignment of how they, I didn't tell them which tools to use.
Okay.
I just said, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And I'm calling it a media anthology, a digital media anthology. you choose what you want to do with your groups, and let's see what happens. And at first, they were a little bit timid.
Yeah.
And intimidated by the space of options. But then they really got into it. So, in fact, what was interesting about this course is that it was interdisciplinary. So I had psychology students, biology students, mass communication students, political science students, and one student from public health. Mm-hmm. So they all got together and talked about, from their different disciplinary lens, how can we create something around feminists, around Della, around what it means to be a superhero, because all of those things are interpretive,
mm-hmm.
and use media and technology to present that. And so some chose podcasts, others mm-hmm. chose more visual mediums, others chose still photography, and it worked out pretty well. So I was pretty
unhappy.
Yeah.
So let me ask the question that I always hear when I share examples of assignments like this.
Mm-hmm.
How do you grade something like that?
Yeah, that was the problem.
Right? What are you looking for, and how do you...
I'm actually in a Women in Media course. I was looking for one group collaboration, like the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Did they include all the elements? Did they talk about some of the concepts that we talked about in class?
Mm-hmm.
Representation, things like that, in terms of theories and concepts that we discussed. So that had to be included somewhere within the presentation. In addition, how creative they were in terms of using technology.
Okay.
And if they did a podcast, what type of questions were they asking?
Okay.
Did they follow the time limit? Simple things around instructions, because I think that's important.
Okay.
If you're doing a podcast or any type of digital
sure.
Media piece, time is very, very important.
Right.
But also content and research. Did they include research? So what were their ideas connected to some other body mm-hmm. of work?
Mm-hmm.
And that research had to be connected to some type of digital ethnography or digital understanding of how to present various concepts or some of the readings in class.
Mm-hmm.
So they had three elements.
Mm-hmm.
And so in grading that, I looked at whether those elements were present
mm-hmm.
and to what extent.
Yeah.
So it was a Likert scale. And then I gave an overall summative comment.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was very difficult because some would do very, very well when it's... I mean, this...
Yeah.
This film was fantastic. This woman running through campus. But the podcast was also creative and meaningful in
right.
a way that the film wasn't.
Right. Right.
Right? So the different approaches were very creative, but the podcast allowed for more discussion and language around dissecting feminism on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And if students even believed in the cause mm-hmm. of feminism, right? Posing questions.
Gotcha. So there was... Some of the projects were able to represent a level of analysis or a level mm-hmm. of argumentation that was maybe stronger than other projects.
Right.
And I think, the reason I ask is, especially with these open-ended projects, mm-hmm. I find that often faculty will assign them, and then they're just so impressed at how varied they are and how creative they are and how cool it is. And their response is to just say, well, it's all great, right?
Yeah.
And you want it to be great, and sometimes they are all great, but I think we also have an obligation to help students understand how they're making arguments. Are they making appropriate arguments, right? What's the strength? Are they using the tools in really creative ways?
Right.
Is there a good match between their medium and their message, right? I mean, there are ways to be really analytical about this, and it sounds like you were able to kind of parse it out into these three big areas.
Oh, then, don't get me wrong. I said, everything's great.
Right.
But I had to step back and say, well, everything's was different. And,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't want to compare the projects, but in terms of the three elements that I was looking for,
mm-hmm.
to what extent were they
sure.
Developed
yeah.
within the project. So I had my rubric, but I just thought everything was great. But some were much more... analytical, much more sophisticated than others.
Sure. Yeah. Did you have them present in class or share out in some way?
We had a mini festival, so we invited some other classes down and some other professors to come to our lab, our TV studio, and we aired the podcast. We had popcorn. We had the film showing, and students were very excited. So we're also having a small film festival in the spring, and hopefully they will be shown there as well.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
At the
local community center.
And yeah, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, on our podcast, we try to explore the future of educational technology, and that's a pretty big space.
Yes.
As you look ahead to, say, 5 years out,
mm-hmm.
what would you want to see in terms of educational technology in higher ed?
I think one of the biggest things is one of the biggest challenges we have is equity. So I would like to see more equity across the board, from university to university.
Mm-hmm.
I think some schools have more resources, and so their students are better prepared for the new technologies as they come out, as they roll out, and they have a better understanding of how to use them and how to integrate them into the various spaces, whether it's business or creative spaces or whatever type of job that they may have.
Mm-hmm.
And other schools are under-resourced.
Mm.
So perhaps in 5 years, I would like to see more equitable distribution of resources.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's idealistic, but you said, what would you like to see?
Yes, I'm asking you to make wishes here. So.
I'm making a big wish for equity. I'm making a big wish for more faculty to get on board the digital train
mm-hmm.
and not to feel left out.
Mm.
Faculty who have been teaching for 10, 15, 20 years and said, I'm not doing that. I'm sticking with my chalkboard.
Right.
Which is fine, and it has this place, and it's very meaningful.
Mm.
But also, if you integrate just small things in your classroom, you can see the difference in the students because you're speaking a language that they may be familiar with. And it also helps better prepare them, I think, for
mm-hmm.
the world that they're going to be living in. So maybe to not be so stubborn a little bit.
Right.
To be just a little bit open and have those conversations. And I think... you all have the Center for Teaching and Learning here,
mm-hmm. yeah.
As well. We have at Xavier to take advantage of those opportunities and go. And I think everyone at those centers are ready to show you about all the wonderful tools and to
teach. Yes, we are.
Slowly but surely.
Yeah, and intentionally too, right?
Yeah.
And using tools in ways that really help your students learn in the ways you want them to, right? And not every tool is great, and not every tool is great for every purpose. But often there are some tools that can be leveraged in really intentional ways.
For example, we use Brightspace at Xavier.
Yeah, we do too. We just switched last year.
Okay, yes, we did as well. And it's fantastic. So they have this, when you're grading your assignments, you can leave a voice note. Now, I find it fantastic because the old way of grading, I have to write out everything and it takes forever. Now I just have my rubric in front of me and I speak to the student. Well, I can leave them a small video of me grading them, and it's almost as if they're in my office.
Oh, wow.
And a student wrote me back the very first time I did that with her assignment. She said, this was great. I got exactly what you're saying. Sometimes your handwriting isn't so good.
right?
So
yeah.
This works really well because I really can see how you use the rubric in grading my work, and
mm-hmm.
I can see how I can improve it because you spoke to me as if I was in your office.
Yeah.
That tool right there is a life saver. It's a life changer. It saves time. It's great. It's awesome. And I think that every faculty can use it to really enhance their student-teacher interaction as well.
Yeah.
The students were like, wow, she took the time to... She's talking to me. And they can replay over and over
yeah,
again.
Yeah, right.
That's
right,
the
right.
best part about it.
Well, I have 15 papers to grade this week, and so I may actually try that.
I think it's a lifesaver.
Because I'll spend 20 minutes trying to type out some feedback to the students where, it may be easier for me, too, just to speak into a microphone for 5 minutes and tell them what I saw in their paper.
Exactly. And because I have the rubric there, and I go through each, I may read through the paper first, and I have some mental notes or a few notes, but then I talk about it as I'm reading it.
Yeah.
And so it's just like the student is in your office hours.
Yeah,
and
that's great.
Walking them through it step by step. First one, let's go to the first paragraph. This is where you need to do this, and this is what you did well. Always give them the sandwich method. You're great. Let's work on this, and you're great.
Right.
Continue, that type of thing. And students really appreciate that. I only had one student that didn't like it so much because she was, she said, "This is new. What are you doing?
Well, welcome to the world."
I am pro voice note.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
One last question, and we ask this of most of our guests, actually. We focus a lot on digital educational technology in our podcast. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite analog educational technology that you like to use?
No. Thank you, no. Do I have to get
that? No. We've never gotten to know before. I'm loving this.
No, I don't have a favorite. No. That's it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, the digital tools give you what you need, right?
They do. And it just makes life a little bit easier for me as a professor. But also, I think it helps with the students as well, as long as they have access to
sure.
it.
Sure. Yeah.
But it really helps with our engagement. It helps with our understanding. It helps with students who may learn differently.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the read-write, you have visual, you have audio. So all of those things are happening and
yeah.
meet the various needs of each learner.
Sure.
So I find digital is the way I'm totally sold. Bye-bye, analog. Goodbye.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you, Tia. This has been a lovely conversation. Thanks for chatting with us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That was Tia Smith, BellSouth Professor of Mass Communication at Xavier University of Louisiana. I really appreciated how thoughtful she was about assessing her students' digital projects and her practical approach to the resource challenges her students face. I met Tia through Elizabeth Yost Hammer, the director of the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier. Tia participated in a faculty learning community at the center last year, one focused on teaching with technology. I've been reaching out to a few teaching center directors to ask for suggestions for Leading Lines interviews, and when I reached out to Elizabeth, I realized we had corresponded about podcasts before, 10 years ago. Back in 2008, I was an assistant director here at the Vanderbilt Center for Teaching, and I had just launched our first podcast, which is no longer around, actually. Elizabeth had launched a podcast at her center that year, too, but it's still going strong 10 years later. That's a lot of longevity for a podcast. It's called Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else, and you can find a link to it in the show notes. To find our show notes, as well as past episodes with full transcripts, visit our website, leadinglinespod.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook, too. Just search for Leading Lines Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Leading Lines is produced by the Vanderbilt Center for Teaching, the Vanderbilt Institute for Digital Learning, the Office of Scholarly Communications at the Vanderbilt Libraries, and the Associate Provost for Education Development and Technologies. This episode was edited by Rhett McDaniel. Look for new episodes the first and third Monday of each month. I'm your host, Derek Brough. Thanks for listening.